Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, sir. As he said, Luke Morrow, Brandon Scott in for the fellas, but T. Mill on the steel wheels holding it down, keeping us in lane today. As we got a lot to get to over the next 4 hours, you can join the conversation throughout the text line 713-572-4610. And of course, on the YouTube and Twitch streams as well, we'll engage with you there. You can not only listen, but watch the show there. And Brandon, you were out at OTAs today.
Yeah, man, I still stink from out there, man. I'm still musty. Still musty from being out there, but it's a good time to be out there. We actually got a little breeze. I'm complaining. Well, we actually got a little breeze. Got to get a little insight into what's going on, or lack thereof,
yeah,
into what's going on with the quarterback of your Houston Texans. So, yeah, it's a lot to break down over the next 4 hours. A good time, though, getting just anytime you get to lay eyes on a new team, and every year it's a new team, it always feels good. It's our third time being able to do so with these OTAs. And so, yeah, man, it's a lot to break down over these next 4 hours, man.
Yeah, it's an exciting time of the year for all fan bases. Hope springs eternal. You start looking forward to the new season. You get to see some of the new guys, how they all fit in. But, of course, with the Texans, it doesn't come without drama. And as we sit here, not often do you look up on the TV screen where today in studio we have ESPN on the TV screen. Not often do you look up and see that the Texans are the ones being talked about.
Yeah.
But it was the lead story on this edition of SportsCenter that C.J. Stroud did not throw at practice today. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans in a moment and what the coach had to say. But since you were out there.
So what stood out to me most about it, though, Luke, is not just that he didn't throw. Because if I had gone into the day assuming that he wouldn't throw, then it wouldn't have been necessarily as noteworthy. Still would have been noteworthy because he's the quarterback of the team, but not necessarily as noteworthy. I did go into the day with at least the possibility in mind that he could throw. You know, and this is from, you know, Aaron Wilson had some reporting on this over the weekend. I did television with Aaron Wilson on Sunday, and we got to talk about this both on the air and off the air and just kind of have the conversation. And he said this, both on the air and off. Hey, don't be surprised if you see him out there Tuesday. It's not that drastic to where he can't participate or won't. It is possible that you see him, unlike last week, that you'll see him doing more and throwing during team activities. And so, of course, we're all out there, you know, on the edge of our seats, right, just to see, is this going to happen? And, of course, it doesn't. And then the answers or lack thereof that we got after the fact, I think, fueled the flames just a little bit that, you know, it's OTAs. It's not necessarily time to panic, but there is something. There is a there somewhere with the CJ Stroud situation. It's not just. I think it's a little bit more than just a precaution. I think he's actually hurt.
Ooh,
that's the way it seems.
And did that change just in today? That feeling? Or did you feel like that?
I think it was fortified today. There was a sneaky suspicion, obviously, based off of what we saw last week or didn't see last week, and then based on today, I think it was fortified quite a bit. So yeah, you're out there, you're watching Slovis and Davis Mills do their thing, and C.J. Stroud's out there. He's got his helmet on, which was different from Wednesday, at least.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his helmet on, but all he's doing is handoffs. And I keep coming back to this, Luke. These are not strenuous workouts and practices. They're not, I don't want to say they're not busting ass out there, but they're not. You know, it's OTAs. They're not going to the ground. Rarely do they do that anyway. That's a training camp thing. But they're not going to the ground. It's not a super strenuous workout. I just don't feel like what they're doing right now is demanding enough to where if he wasn't hurt, if he wasn't injured, that he wouldn't be out there. And then it just makes sense. He's the quarterback. It's a new offense. It's a remade offensive line. There's new terminology, new personnel. There's so much newness associated with the team, with the offense specifically, that you would think the captain, the leader of the ship, would be doing more if he could. And I absolutely think he would be doing more if he could. So that I think that tells you something.
I had a coach who always used to say there's a difference between hurt and injured.
Yeah. Right?
Like if you're hurt, just rub some dirt on it, get back out there. If you're injured, that's a different story. And so for CJ Stroud, I think my perception, and I think maybe most people, is like he's hurt, not injured. But the longer this lingers and maybe some of the non-answers we get as well, maybe that thought starts to change in the mind of some. You were there. You heard from D'Amico. Let's hear from the head coach of the Texans as well. D'Amico Ryans was asked about his quarterback, C.J. Stroud, not throwing. Here's what he said and didn't say.
First off, I know everybody's going to ask. First, C.J. not throwing again. There's no concerns with C.J. It's just general soreness. We're taking extra precaution with him, but he'll be good to go. No concerns on my end there. Really excited the way our guys are working and competing out at practice. When you see a good team, what excites me is you're seeing both sides make plays. Offense, defense, there's a lot of back and forth, guys making plays. So really excited to see where our team are here in our second week of practicing. They're really growing, developing, taking the steps we need to take, and it's fun to watch. For CJ, it'll be, like I said, he has general soreness, and we're just taking extra precaution with him. When he's ready to go, he'll be ready to go.
Shoulder in the offseason?
That's it for CJ, guys. On the questions, that's it. What I said, that's it for him. Like, it's general soreness, and we're taking extra precaution with him. We're not going to rush him into anything. He'll be fine. When the moment is for him to be ready to go, he'll be ready to go.
And let me just clarify this for the people that couldn't hear the questions, and since I was there. The second question was, would he be ready for training camp? Notice that you didn't get an answer of, yes, he'll be ready for training camp. And then the third question was, did he have some kind of procedure or surgery on the shoulder during the offseason? And you also did not get a definitive yes or no. Now, here's a question that I would like to know the answer to, but I don't think it would have been fair to ask D'Amico because it would have felt like I was trying to either trap him or do a gotcha moment. And we're just not here for that necessarily. But when he says there's no concern, Luke,
mm-hmm.
My question on that is, if there was concern, would you tell us? Right? Like, would you, if you were legitimately concerned the way some of the fan base is, the way some of the media is, would you admit it? Or would you just say there's no concern, even if there was one? I don't know the answer to that, but I suspect that the answer would be no, that they wouldn't say, hey, you know what? CJ's not throwing, his shoulder hurts, or is injured, and we're concerned. Yeah. It's a problem, guys. Let's everybody panic. Like, they're not going to do that. So I don't know how much to read into they're not concerned. I want to say, oh, great, D'Amico's not concerned. Oh, great, Nick Haley's not concerned. Oh, great, the team's not concerned. But would they tell us if they were? I don't think so.
That's a fair point. I agree with you. I don't think so either. Because I was going to say, when you hear the no concern, that calms me. But then when you hear him dodging questions about off-season surgery, when the answer could just simply be, no, he didn't have any off-season procedures, and you put that to rest, those two things don't really jive for me, where that suddenly leads to concern when you're being a little shady, right? You're not being transparent. What are you hiding?
Avoidant.
Yeah, avoidant. That's a good term for it. And I said the same thing through this whole Yordan situation, even last year at Kyle Tucker, that, well, we talked about it yesterday, and you mentioned it before the show, that, you know, the cover-up's always worse than the crime. When you seem like you're hiding something, it makes it worse. It makes me more suspicious. And when you can't just simply answer that question and just say, no, he didn't have anything done, that makes me believe, A, something was done, and then B, that might lead to more concern, at least for me, if not the Texans.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. I don't feel like anything nefarious is going on here in terms of them being avoidant. Like, I understand their standpoint, and I also think it's okay. I mentioned this quite a bit whenever I'm on, that our interest and their interest are not the same, which means that it's okay if the relationship is sometimes a little bit adversarial, because they're motivated to not give you information in certain cases like this, and all we're in is the information, and then, you know, for us on the radio, also the entertainment business. So like, our interests are just different. You know, if I'm on their side, I probably playing the same game, or I'm probably towing the same party line as they are. So, like, I don't think that there's anything necessarily, like, again, nefarious about this, but the avoidance does make you wonder and question, okay, soreness. Soreness from what? Soreness from what action?
Yeah.
You know, we've got somebody on the text line right now that's pointing out from the 281, why is CJ sore? He's been off for 6 months, however many months it's actually been. He's been off for a while. What's he sore from?
Oh, no.
What happened? And we just don't have an answer to that. And it would make us feel bad, even though they don't necessarily owe us the full, transparent, absolute truth. You know, this isn't government. This isn't taxpayer dollar necessarily type of accountability. We would still feel a lot more comfortable if we got a better answer, something that was just a little bit more than we're not going to rush him. Rush him from what? You know, like we're being cautious. Cautious about what?
Yeah.
He's sore. Sore from what? That's the question.
Yeah, he's a 23-year-old that, like you said, hasn't thrown in 6 months. So everyone's pondering or wondering, okay, you tell us about this general soreness that is severe enough he can't throw for the entire week of OTAs, but what is leading to that? I'm old enough, when people ask how old are you, I can say I'm old enough that sometimes I wake up, I'm just sore from just sleeping.
Yeah.
But when I don't think that was happening when I was 23, and I certainly wasn't a professional athlete. So there are questions around that. And the dodging of the questions from D'Amico, it's like when you come home late at night or the next morning and your girlfriend asks you, you know, like, were you at the strip club last night? And your response is like, well, why would you ask me that?
Right.
And you could just simply say, no, I wasn't.
Well, you'd be like, would I ask you that?
Yeah,
I don't ask you where you be going.
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait a minute, though.
A yes.
And this is just a general rule in our business, right? When you ask, and this is why they also train us and teach us to ask direct questions, especially when you're looking for a direct answer. Ask direct questions and seek direct answers. They did a good job the press corps today of asking direct questions. And to be fair, and I love D'Amico just as much as anybody, to be fair, direct questions were asked and direct answers were not necessarily given, you know? And even before that, trying to get out in front of it, hey, before you guys ask, this is what I got to say about it.
Right.
And then when the direct questions get asked, you go back to the same thing that you said before, you know, instead of answering directly. So I think that is telling. What they're not saying is the silence is deafening
in
some ways.
Right. A lot of times the silence, it's louder than what they are saying. And as I said yesterday, like, something isn't always everything, but everything is something, I think was the line. As we roll ahead and try to look forward, try to project this thing, do you have long-term concern, or is this just kind of an off-season thing? Once we get towards the summer, you know, there's no reason to be worried about this. It's a short-term problem. Or do you think this is something that, and we're just doing it, we're not doctors, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but your best guess, do you think this could be a long-term concern?
Just specific to the injury, I feel like it's way too early to have a long-term concern about the injury. But where my long-term concern would come into play is just and I've talked about this when I was doing the morning show with Seth in previous days, it's the residual. It's the urgency of getting everything else around CJ Stroud right. So, like, if we get into the season and the offensive line has not shown the improvement that so many fans hope that it does, it's not clicking the way that you hope it does, it's going to be hard not to think back to the fact that CJ Stroud wasn't even healthy enough to throw at OTAs, and now you're not protecting them worth a damn, similar to the way that you were last year. And that's an if. You know, it could come out that the offensive line turns out to be much improved, CJ Stroud is fine, and we all just roll. But if the things around, the infrastructure around him is not such that it's protecting him in ways that it did not last year, then yeah, I'm going to have long-term concerns about the overall viability and health of the quarterback, who, by the way, is going to be up for a contract extension by the end of this season.
You can text your opinion 713-572-4610. Where are you on CJ Stroud? All sorts of texts already rolling in. And I do want to highlight this one from the 832 where he says, Astros PTSD is real, though. And I was going to bring this up as well at some point over these 4 hours, that, to use another relationship metaphor or analogy, it's almost like when you start dating somebody and they hold their past partner's crimes against you.
Yep.
And that's almost similar here, where because of what Houston sports fans have dealt with the Astros, and look, the Texans aren't completely clean. We had the Christian Harris thing going on throughout last season that was somewhat similar to Kyle Tucker, even now Yordan, whatever. But mostly, the crimes have pertained to the Astros, and now the Texans are almost being held guilty of those same crimes. Do you think that some of this fear, consternation from Texans fans with C.J. Stroud does stem from what we've been dealing with the Astros, that automatically makes you a little bit more worried or just untrusting.
Man, it's not even just the proximity of or the Venn diagram of Texans fans and Astros fans by and large being the same people. Like, that's the proximity, right? But it's the timing, Luke. Okay, so first OTAs was what, Wednesday? What, I'm already forgetting. The first one was Wednesday.
Yep.
Okay, Jordan goes out there and does BP on Friday. On Saturday, okay, and by the way, also the Texans went back out there on Friday as well. Okay, so on the same day as Jordan is doing BP, the Texans are doing their second day of OTAs, and CJ Stroud again is not throwing. Meanwhile, Jordan is out there doing BP with a broken hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you don't find out until the next day that it's broken. So we're talking about Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. In a four-day period here, you see your quarterback not throwing twice, and then you see your main slugger, your best player on your baseball team, taking BP one day, and, oh, it feels like he's close. Let's do lineup watch and see when Jordan's back in the lineup. And then the next day, it's up. You know what? His hand's broken. So I just think there's a proximity issue of these being the same folks, and then there's a timing issue of, man, you know what? It's not like I'm just thinking about the Kyle Tucker thing from last year. I'm thinking about how the Kyle Tucker thing and the Jordan Alvarez thing are very similar. They compound, and now this Alvarez thing is happening at the same time as the Stroud thing. So it's both who the people are and the timing of the issue. I think it's hard not to separate it, even if it's not 100% logical.
Yeah,
because they don't really have anything to do with each other, but we the same people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we care about both teams. We care about both players. And so, I think it's hard to ignore or separate.
Just like you and the cheating ex might not be the same situations, but that girlfriend, she's the same person that dealt with those scenarios, and she's holding you accountable.
And it's like, you the one with the type. Don't blame me because you got a type. You know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Throw it back at him. Hey, CJ did not throw again today. We played D'Amico's comments, dodged some questions about what the offseason's been like for CJ Stroud. How does it make you feel about your Texans quarterback? 713-572-4610 to engage with the show. He's B. Scott. I'm Luke Morrow. We're in for the fellas today here on The Drive. He was out at OTAs today. We got plenty to get to from the day that was for the Texans, including when we come back. D'Amico wasn't the only person who spoke today. And did we get the best indication of what this Nick Caley offense might look like this year? We'll get to that next. It's The Drive.
The top-ranked show in the city.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Fellows are out today. Luke Morrow and Brandon Scott hanging out with you instead here on The Drive. T-Mill holding things down on the ones and twos as always. Coming up, did we get the best insight into what this offense might be for the Houston Texans in 2025? B. Scott was out at OTAs today. Before we get to that piece of audio from a question you asked, right? You came in saying you feel pretty confident Christian Kirk, clear number two wide receiver on this team as we sit here today.
Yeah, I just feel like we probably do a bad job. And when I say, I'm not talking about you and I specifically, but just like the collective we do a bad job about discussing the wide receiver depth after the main guy, and we go wide receiver number two, wide receiver number three, and it's a little bit more complex than that. But if we're just talking about the second best pass catching option that they've got on this team, I don't know how, until proven otherwise, until we see something different, I don't know how that guy is not Christian Kirk. And the reason why I point that out is because I feel like we're reluctant, the collective we again, are reluctant to call a slot receiver your number one or your number two guy, whatever exactly the number two guy means. We're reluctant to do that, but there are plenty of examples of it around the league. And Christian Kirk, to his credit, and I know he's been unhealthy the last couple of years, hasn't necessarily been able to live up to certainly his own expectations, and not that first year that he was in Jacksonville when he looked really good. But he's the most accomplished receiver on this team that's not named Nico Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's the most talented receiver that we've seen so far, save for the rookies who obviously got to prove it before you can actually really feel confident in that. So I think that Christian Kirk is the second best receiver on this team. It's not particularly close yet until proven otherwise. And I think that's something that we got to start embracing and start thinking of Christian Kirk in that way, as a guy that you expect to be one of their primary playmakers catching the ball. So it was cool to hear from him. This is the first time I had heard from him since he joined the team. I'm not sure if he had done a media availability before this at all. I don't recall one. So this was our first look at him, or first chance to speak with him and talk to him. So I thought that was really cool. You know, he's a little bit smaller than I was expecting,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I'm expecting him to be a real dynamic piece of this offense. And it was also cool to hear him talk about the offense in a way that I don't think anybody else has necessarily done. They're going to be mostly generic when they talk about it, and they're not going to give us everything. They're not going to show us everything, certainly not in OTAs. They're not going to tell us everything of what the offense is about. But I thought Christian Kirk did a good job of at least speaking to it. And part of my question to him was, what do you like about the offense? I think that's a general enough question to allow them to go where they want to go. And I appreciated Christian Kirk speaking to it. So it was nice to lay eyes on him. And also, I'm expecting pretty big things from him.
Yeah, certainly. As am I. I remember being on this show with Ron when that trade happened, and we were both pretty big on the addition of Christian Kirk. I think the biggest question right now for Texans fans as we sit here this afternoon is about the health of the quarterback, C.J. Stroud. But the second biggest question is, what is this offense going to look like? What is Nick Caley going to try to do with this offense? So this question and answer that we've alluded to from Christian Kirk was B. Scott asked him, what are the challenges of learning this Nick Caley offense? What do you like about it? Here's what Christian Kirk said today.
Nick is all ball, very intelligent, very smart, does a great job communicating to us, you know, what the expectations are, route detail, you know, motions, formations, whatever the case may be. He's done a great job kind of laying that out for us. And it's been, I guess, primarily pretty easy, you know, just being able to learn it the way he's been able to install it. You know, Ben McDaniels in our room has done a great job teaching us just all the things from a football IQ aspect that you need to know as a receiver. And this offense is dynamic. A lot of motions, a lot of pre-snap adjustments for the defense to have to, you know, deal with. So I think you'll see a lot of guys in different places to be able to make plays.
A lot of motions, a lot of pre-snap adjustments, a lot of movement, guys in different places to,
I like that.
To make different plays. And I think fairly generic, but also more specific than what we normally get. And again, we don't expect them to say a lot, but you know, that was, I think, good to hear. And really the pre-snap motions part of it, and what we already know and understand to be the change in CJ Stroud and the sort of how communication works pre-snap. And so that's going to be something to watch out for. I think that, you know, Christian Kirk, just in answering a simple question, gave you a little bit of insight of what you can expect from the offense. And also the part about the how easy it is to learn it, because I asked him, you know, what's the difficulty in learning the new offense? And he said it's been pretty easy. And I take that and just think about the communication, you know, and how it wasn't necessarily ideal with Bobby Slowick, either from a player input standpoint or from an adjustment standpoint. I don't feel like they thought they did either well enough, right? Take player input and adjust on the fly. You know, I always used to say Bobby Slowick would go into a game with a decent script. He would have gotten a B+, maybe even an A in some cases in script writing.
But
in improv, he would have gotten a D at best. Like, he just wasn't good at improv. And so I'm waiting to see what that looks like. It seems like Nick Caley is going to be someone, and of course we don't know this, but just based off of how they're communicating with us now, he seems like he's going to be a guy who's going to have more answers than the last guy did.
That's certainly the hope. I hope so. I like what Christian Kirk said. Offense is dynamic.
Yes.
That sounds good.
I hadn't heard anybody call it that yet.
No.
Because, I mean, we don't know what it is.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, sure. I'll take that. I have no idea what a Nick Caley offense is. No. So if you're going to call it dynamic, I'll take that.
That's pretty good. If you're selling an offense, we haven't seen the offense yet. So if you say, hey, dynamic, lots of motions, pre-snap adjustments, those are all good things. That's a big buzzword, too, in the NFL nowadays, all about the pre-snap motion. And there's a lot of questions about, is this going to be a Patriots offense? Is this going to be a Rams, Sean McVay offense? What is Nick Caley going to do? Is it going to be a combination of the two? McVay, Shanahan, they're big on a lot of that moving around. And I'm sure Josh McDaniels uses some of it, but I do remember when Josh McDaniels left the Raiders, then Luke Getsy took over and might not be the best play caller, but one of the things the players mentioned was the biggest difference was suddenly the increase in pre-snap movement and pre-snap motion that Josh McDaniels was not doing. So simply just based off of this little snippet from Christian Kirk, and you wonder, is it going to be Patriots? Is it going to be Rams? Maybe a combination, because we talk about that game plan offense being more like New England. I feel like, though, this answer from Christian Kirk, maybe I'm making a mountain out of a molehill. It reminds me more of Sean McVay and the Rams.
Yeah, and the game plan, I was talking about this with Seth yesterday. There is a little bit of, you know, sports PTSD. I don't like to make light of PTSD, but like sports PTSD of the game plan offense as a buzzword, not wanting it to be that. I like to lean more into what they call personnel based, and that is not allowing the defense to dictate what your offense is going to look like, but simply just allowing the guys on the team, the guys that you intend to play, that dictating what the offense is going to look like. And if they got guys that can handle all of that, they feel like C.J. Stroud is the guy that can handle the, you know, making the pre-snap checks and audibles and things like that, and that they've got interchangeable parts that they can move around, then, you know, let's go for it. But I do like to think of the offense more as a personnel-based one and not just a game plan. Because I know that's a frustration for many Texans fans, is don't let the other dictate. You dictate. You set right. the tone. You go out there and set the tone and set the tempo, and you go from there.
Yeah, I mean, different sports, but we kind of saw that in the Pacers-Knicks series of you force the other team to play your style, and that's what allowed the Pacers to be successful. I always like that philosophy from coaches in all sports.
Yes.
Hey, following Ronald Darby's retirement, what's the thinnest position group of the Texans? We'll get to that next. It's in the
They're job. All fixable.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Luke Morrow and Brandon Scott in for the guys of The Drive this afternoon. T-Mill holding things down the other side of the glass. And you as well. You can get in touch with the show, 713-572-4610. What's the thinnest position group on the Texans roster now following Ronald Darby's retirement yesterday? We'll also hear from D'Amico on that in a moment. From the 281, after last segment talking about Christian Kirk's comments and what this offense might look like, 281 says, it's great to hear that from Christian Kirk. Pre-snap was one of the biggest issues in our offense last year. I love it.
Yeah, and they also mentioned how they were getting up to the line of scrimmage with just a couple of seconds left on the play clock. That is such a great point, because I didn't even think about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I that wasn't even something that I was sort of focused on. It's like, look, the play clock was an issue, and, you know, hopefully that they got a better plan pre-snap to where that's not as big of an issue as it was before. So, nice point there from the 281.
You text the show, 713-572-4610. Following the retirement yesterday of Ronald Darby, what's the thinnest position group on this Texans roster right now? What a shame, too. I just got my Ronald Darby Texans jersey just arrived in the mail.
Right? Like, it did, but hardly knew you.
I know.
Hardly. I thought it was going to be Ronald Darby bobblehead night on one of these games, man, and we don't even get it.
Yeah, it's going to go down as a footnote that he was once a member of the Houston Texans.
Ed Reed all over again.
That's right.
But you know what's funny? Like, he was at OTAs their first, at least their first couple of practices,
yeah.
Their first few practices.
He was like, hey, coach, I'm here, ready to go. Let's go.
What was it about that swarm?
Oh, I'm tired.
You know? And look, we're all on the other side, right? Like, you can identify, like, once you get to be in your 30s, things ain't just quite the same no more. So it's like, I get it. I can understand. But I do wonder, like, once you go out there, okay? So, he made this decision somewhat abruptly. Once you go out, what is it? Can't be the heat. He's played in the heat before. So I'm just real curious, you know, not that he owes us an answer, but I would be curious to know, what was it that made you say, you know what? I played 10 years in the league. I got money in my pocket. I don't want a Super Bowl. I don't need this, because I can respect that. I'm just curious on what it was.
Yeah, I heard, I think it was the guys earlier today, I think it was with In the Loop. And I think it's a combination of the two factors they were talking about, where he might not just have it anymore, being that it's been 10 years in the league. Pro Football Focus ranked him as the third worst cornerback in the NFL last year. And then maybe it's also a combination of looking around at the rest of that position group and realizing, like, yeah, you know what? My opportunities might not be here this year. Or I just, 10 years in, I don't feel like competing with these guys anymore, let alone the heat, and calling it quits.
Well, you know what? I wonder if it was the opposite, though. Because as we're having this conversation about the thinnest position group, did he look around and say, you know what, I'm a Derek Stingley Jr., a Kamari Lassiter injury away from being one of the primary corners on this team.
Interesting.
And I might have to play a lot. And you know what? I signed this deal to ride the bench, maybe. I don't want to have the same role that I had in yesteryear, in my heyday. I just want to kind of observe and watch Derek All-Pro Sting and the emerging Kamari Lassiter do their thing. And then he looked around and said, you know what? Something happens to one of those guys. I got to get out there. I don't know if I want to do that. I wonder.
It's interesting. He's like Pacino, right? Just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in. He didn't want to be pulled back in. He just retires instead. By the way, someone on the text line said, just like Tony Boselli, that's another one, like Ed Reed. Have you guys ever, I was obviously joking about the jersey, but have you ever bought someone's jersey and then had that player traded or retired like within months of spending money on their jersey?
No. But I did have to, not to bring the mood down, but I did have to check a family member for giving one of my kids, my daughter nonetheless, a Deshaun Watson jersey post scandal.
And
I think it was one of those things where like they were just like cheap jerseys, or if it was donated, it was one of those things. They didn't go and pay sticker price for a Deshaun jersey. I'm sure you couldn't get one for sticker price at that point. But like we got like these hand-me-down jerseys. Lamar Jackson was one. I was fine with that one. But when I saw my baby girl wearing a Deshaun Watson jersey, I was just like, you know what? This we ain't gonna do. So that I know it's a little different from your question, but that's probably the closest that it's gotten. Seeing my daughter wear a Deshaun Watson jersey and immediately telling her that she couldn't wear it, you know, post 2022.
That would
be mine.
Yeah. Well, that's understandable. That's a good one. What about you, Tyler? You ever buy a jersey that quickly became irrelevant?
Davis Mills.
Oh, famously.
Yeah.
Famously.
That I believe is the only one, thankfully. And I mean, Ron likes to act like I was calling this guy quarterback one. I was just trying to will it into existence, okay? I was trying to support my dude.
Being a good fan.
Supporting the General Mills.
And to be fair, though, still on the team. Still number 10.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. You can still wear it.
And QB1 right now.
That, Luke.
QB1 right now.
That's true.
That's a frightening thought to ponder on.
Hey, this would be the time to wear it.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, OTA summertime. That's the time to wear your Davis Mills jersey.
Time to get the Mills army together.
You're ready to go.
That's the one getting all the action out there at OTAs.
It's like the people that are prepared for the zombie apocalypse and they have like the shelter and all the food. You're prepared. God forbid, I don't want to speak into existence, but should anything happen, you're ready to go with the backup if he were to have to step in at any time.
This is making me squeamish. We should not do this.
All right.
I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I'm already uncomfortable.
Back to the lecture at hand. What's the thinnest position group for the Houston Texans now following Darby's retirement? Before we give our answers, let's first hear from D'Amico Ryans, who was asked today, following that news, will they be looking to add at that position? Here's what the head coach said.
For Darby, with the decision that he made to retire, I know what that decision is like. It's not an easy decision, but I just want to wish Darby the best. I know it's a very difficult time to step away from the game that you love whenever that decision comes, whether, you know, it's voluntary or it's your body saying you can't do it. It's difficult because you've done it for such a long time, and I don't take that decision lightly. And when it comes to us and how do we fill the position, yes, we'll look to add another corner, whether it's a veteran or a younger player, whoever it may be, we'll look to add a guy.
And I said this yesterday, where I don't think you're going to miss a lot from Darby on the field. I think what you miss most is that leadership, and I think you can find that leadership elsewhere between now and the start of the season to bring in another one of those veteran cornerbacks that was discussed and throw him into that room, and there's plenty of options out there. I don't want to put words in your mouth or even ask a leading question, but would you say, is defensive back, because I saw a lot of Texans fans online after this news saying like, oh man, we were going to count on this guy. We're short back there. Would you say right now defensive back, is that the thinnest?
Well, first, I would mention this just to the leadership point. There's not a void of that on the defensive side of the ball. So they're fortunate in that way that they don't need as much leadership as maybe some other teams do. So that's a plus for the Texans. To the point of the defensive back, this is a difficult question. That's why I like it. Because it's a difficult question to answer because I have so many sitting questions about a number of different groups. And depending on what the answers to my questions are would dictate what the answer to your question is, which is what is the thinnest position group? I think we got some candidates, okay? So on the defensive side, which is funny to even talk about them in this way because they seem stacked on the defensive side, just to be clear. But on the defensive side, I feel like cornerback is a candidate. I feel like linebacker is a candidate. And then on the offensive side, I think the obvious is the candidate, and that's the offensive line. But without really knowing how the offensive line is going to come together, it's, you know, they got a lot of bodies at least, so it's hard to call that thin. You know, you don't know if any of them are good, but they got plenty of bodies. The cornerback position. I don't know if I could feel better about a group at the top end, maybe other than defensive end with Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. But at the top end, you got to feel great about All-Pro Sting and Kamari Lassiter. But as I was getting at earlier in the segment, something happens to one of those guys. God forbid they experience some quote-unquote soreness,
yeah.
Right?
Seems to be going around.
And who does that thrust into the spotlight? Who now is tasked with filling that role? And without Ronald Darby, you know, like Ronald Darby seemed like a good remedy to the Jeff Okuda question of last year. Like, you were expecting that to be the guy. Mm-hmm. Or I know C.J. Henderson, before he didn't make the team, was suspected to be a potential guy like that. Yeah, I felt good about Ronald Darby as your third cornerback. I'm not exactly sure who the third cornerback would be. They got Jalen Smith, who they drafted and is touted as a super versatile and dynamic type of guy who can play pretty much all the spots in the secondary from safety to corner. But that was in college. Is that necessarily the case in the pros, or is he something more specific in the pros? I don't know the answer to that. If he's truly the Swiss Army knife that they say he is and that they think he is, then all of a sudden I do feel a lot better about that position group. But I don't know. Same thing. Miles Bryan is out there. That's a little dude, you know, but scrappy, swarmy. As far as backups go, feel like he could do a lot worse than that. So to answer the question more directly, I would say at the top end, you feel great about cornerback. But in terms of the depth, it is similar to last year. Now that Ronald Darby has decided to retire, that feels like, if not the thinnest position group, it's one of them. For me, it's between that and linebacker. And with similar reason with linebacker, but more so due to health. Like, I don't know who's healthy, mm-hmm. and if they're and what roles everybody's going to play.
I'm with you when it comes to the secondary and the cornerbacks. That was my biggest concern for this defense in the offseason, was the depth. Obviously not the top end talent, but having enough depth there. And now they lost one of those depth pieces yesterday. But also, I've also been thinking on the offensive side, I'm almost worried about the wide receiver group too. And we might spend more time on this later on this afternoon. But you have Christian Kirk, who has been injury prone, and then you have a couple of rookies. And so if one of them, say, just hypothetically speaking, say Kirk goes down, and then you're acquiring even more from those rookie wide receivers. And I think they were good draft picks. I think they're going to be good weapons for the Texans, but God forbid there's some sort of injury that pushes them higher up into the depth chart. You require more from them quicker as well for these guys that are just into the league. And I know we see wide receivers pop all the time now in recent years, Justin Jefferson, AJ Green, although these guys weren't, you know, the top lottery picks, if you will, in the NFL draft. I almost worry about some of the depth there. And then maybe you get to like, you know, at that position, if there were injuries, then like, what's John Metchie going to give you too? So I almost worry about the wide receiver position.
Yeah, So the reason why that wasn't my answer is because I mentioned earlier, I think Christian Kirk is the number two guy in that group. But I already suspect that they're going to require a lot of those guys. Like, I think they were drafted as guys they expect to contribute right away. And so to me, if you're a Texans fan, if you're just an observer watching, it's sink or swim with those guys. I think they are going to be a big part of what they do. And obviously, if they're not ready to play, if they're not any good, then they'll get benched, or what I'm saying won't apply. But I think they drafted those guys because they got skill sets and kind of a ready-made skill set, ready to contribute right away. So, like, I get that, but to me, it's kind of a thing where you got to go with whatever they are, you know. And I can't pretend to know how good they're going to be, but they're definitely going to be a part of it and definitely be in the mix. Wide receiver, I think, is a fine choice for this question for sure.
You can let us know what's the thinnest position group you think on the Texans roster right now. 713-572-4610. Also, text in, what's the worst jersey you ever bought? Somebody said that they got a Deshaun Watson jersey for their wife just before that all went down, so that was bad timing. We had a text that said Johnny Football Browns jersey. What a waste.
I had a jersey of that edition.
Oh, boy.
But that's a lot cheaper than a jersey.
That's true. The 281 also said that your Davis Mills jersey was irrelevant from the moment you bought it.
Yeah. No one's arguing that, friend.
Yeah. We had a Mills army and we had a counter army. That's for sure.
Good thing I got the change to spare, punk. You watch your mouth.
That Aggie money, baby.
Yeah. Text in those answers. Worst jersey you ever bought. 713-572-4610. He's Brandon Scott. I'm Luke Morrow. When we come back, Paul Skeens is not the pitcher to watch in the Astros game. We'll get to that next. It's The Drive.
This is Drive Time, isn't it? Back in Houston.